Let's focus on our breath for 3 deep breaths. Good. Deep in breath. Shanti, shanti, shanti. Your highest self from the Bhagavad Gita, the song of the Lord. And we will talk today about the highest self in light of Rev. Russ's sermon, which you're going to at 11, right?
Yeah, because I'm staying for the social justice meeting.
So we'll be talking about the highest self. We're going to review 3 slokas, which we spent the whole session on last time. And we'll look at some commentary. But ask any questions. All right, chapter 6, number 7. With the self-disciplined mind, you experience a state of constant serenity. Correctly identifying with your highest self, which is called Atman, who or which remains unaffected in heat or cold, pleasure or pain. So there's part of us that remains unaffected, pleasure or pain. We call that the self. Unaffected by praise or blame. We had a long talk about that last week, didn't we? Unaffected by praise or blame. And during the sermon today, I thought about another pair of opposites and wondered if our highest self was unaffected by either love or hate. Is our highest self unaffected by love or hate? And like praise and blame complement each other, can exist without each other, do love and hate also complement each other, and can they exist without each other? I just took that into contemplation. I didn't have any answer because it didn't seem like you need one or the one depends on the other. It didn't seem that way to me. Of course, in unity, we hope that we can be entirely in love without any hate to support love. And I started thinking, is there anything that I hate? I know I feel love for things. Is there anything I hate? I was trying to think about that. Anything I hate. Now my mind has some things that my mind thinks. You know how minds are always looking for how to make things true or false. So let's see. Do I hate the sin but not the sinner? No, that just sounds good. So is there anything that I just hate? And I couldn't really think of anything. So that's something I'm going to take into contemplation. Is my highest self affected by love or hate? Is it affected by love? According to scripture, not really. Love exists somewhere else. Hate too. So if you folks come up with any personal experience you'd like to share in that area, either now or at the time, feel free to discuss it. With a self-disciplined mind, you experience a state of constant serenity. 6:8, a true and steady yogi is utterly content with the wisdom of real knowing. How do we get real knowing? I think part of the path to real knowing is just considering those sorts of things I just brought up. To not be content with ready answers that come up in our minds, but rather to look for what really seems true for us. And then we will be steady yogis, content, utterly content. The wisdom of real knowing is not disturbed by anything, including mental exercises, has controlled and calmed the senses, particularly the emotions. Controlled and calmed the senses. And looks with equal vision on a dirt clod, a stone, or a nugget of gold. A true and steady yogi looks on all of God's creation equally, without letting what is natural to us, which is our desire, desiring this, wanting to avoid that, affect our knowing, utterly content with the wisdom of real knowing. So ask yourself, can you look with equal vision on your gold things and your diamonds, your watches and whatever, and the clouds of dirt? Interesting. Is that something we even want to do? Number 9, a person stands supreme who has equal regard for friends, companions, enemies, neutral arbiters, hateful people, relatives, saints and sinners. Equal regard. Equal regard is an aspect of love. Love your neighbor, not because there are three aspects to love. The first aspect is respect or regard. Second is a spirit of generosity toward someone, and the third is compassion. The three aspects of love, not romantic love, but our brotherly love. Saints and sinners. Let's see what Satchitananda has to say.
Before we move on, I just had one inward reflection. When there's a part of me that gets irritated by someone else outside of me, I know there. I remember that one of the principles is there's that same part is irritating within myself, and I'm not self-projecting that. But what is it called? When I see the irritation in the other person, it's part of myself that I'm irritated about, and I just don't know how to express it. How do you describe this further?
So let's see if I heard what you said.
Yeah.
A part of yourself gets irritated by something someone else does or says or is being. And another part of yourself is irritated with yourself for being irritated. Like, why am I being irritated? Should I be or shouldn't I be? Is that right?
For the most part, yeah. There's also another part that says, I know that same part that I'm irritated about from the other person is a trigger for my internal irritations. I need to figure that out.
The other aspect is you wish to figure out how the other person irritating you, you're guessing, or you know, is somehow triggering something in you.
That's
an irritation.
Yes.
And you'd like to figure that out. Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is, what part of you do you use to figure things out?
So, I think
which aspect of yourself do you use to figure things out?
The mental. Mind.
And we know that the mind is a useful organ and very helpful in many ways, particularly in figuring things out. But We also know somehow that for spiritual questions, the mind often leads us astray. And even though it's got everything figured out, 2 minutes later, the mind looks back at itself and says, no, you didn't figure that out right. Let's figure out some more. Or I still don't get it. Or now I got it. But, oh, that's what the mind does. The mind is a rabbit that just jumps around. It's never happy in any particular rabbit hole. Keeps jumping from one to the next. So I think in a case like that, we need to call upon our three treasures to assist us. Our three treasures. And the first treasure is simplicity. The mind is not a fan of simplicity. The mind is a fan of complexity. So simplicity, what's the simple thing? And that will come from your heart. The second of our treasures is patience. Just to be patient. Well, I see my mind working. It's done its best. It's going from here to there. It doesn't seem to be satisfying me. Great. It's doing its job. I'll let it continue doing its job. I don't mind if it wants to think about that. But I will be patient, waiting for the simple thing to show up for me. And finally, compassion. We need some compassion for our minds. Our minds are a product of evolution. We were born with a certain kind of mind. It changes over time, acquires thoughts, so on. So it's something we can observe as a product of evolution. We need to have some compassion for our mind doing its best. All right, well, thank you very much. You're doing your best. I know you have a mind of your own, but you tried. I'm just going to wait for the simple answer and be patient. And in patience, you'll find peace.
Thank you. That resonates with me.
That's what comes up for me.
Thank you.
I have a mind similar to yours. It just thinks thoughts all the time. Sometimes I try and put particular thoughts in it when I'm meditating, rather than let it run amok, and I'll put particular thoughts. And my mind has a habit of interrupting the thoughts I wanted to think and thinking its own thoughts. And I notice, so I bring my mind back to my meditative thought pattern. And it's like two forces are going on with me. Sometimes my mind is so activated, it just keeps interrupting. Other times, my intention to stay focused on my meditative self and give my mind something to think about. It's like giving a dog a bone, you know. The mind chews on that bone. Sometimes that works just fine, and I can give the mind the bone while I repeat my meditative mantra, and then the mind sometimes doesn't bother me, and I'm able to be peaceful in a state of meditation. My mind is saying that thing, you know, and I myself am peaceful.
Thank you.
Thank you, God.
Right. Thank you, God.
Thank you for a mind.
I just read this morning that you can ask Alexa to do a guided meditation for you.
Oh, really? Oh.
Say that again.
You can ask Alexa to do a guided meditation for you.
Oh.
I haven't tried it yet. I just read it.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? See what happens. Great.
You have to share that with me.
Okay, here's Mr. Satchitananda. He notes, friends are friends, enemies are enemies. How is it possible to see sinner and saint the same? It's a rhetorical question. How is it possible? There might be a part of us that says, wait a minute. They're not the same. I know a particular sinner, and that sinner isn't anything like any saintly person I know, right? Mm-hmm. Who comes up? Someone comes up. So Satchitananda asks the rhetorical question on our behalf. Mm-hmm. And he answers it. You must go beyond saintliness and sin, beyond friend and enemy. Go beyond sin, the idea of what someone did as a sin. How do we do that? And look for something that is common in them all. That's what he suggests. This is going to be a challenge. I can guarantee you this is going to be a challenge, to look for something common in them all. But we can do it. Everybody has a clean self, particularly the sinner who does sins. The image of God, everybody, each also is an expression of the same God, particularly those bad guys, those sinners. They're an expression of the same God, even though we resist this. You can perceive, the operative word here is can. You can perceive that divine element pervading everywhere, functioning through every mind and body. You can do it. Divine element functioning through every mind and body. So saints and sinners both got minds, just like us. When you do that, and you can, you'll always recognize the self that is common to everything and everybody. You can do it, and if you choose to do it, this is a choice that you can make. Satchitananda says you'll always recognize or see the self that is common to everything and everybody. That means you go beyond the so-called sinner and saint. Now, he's not saying that we should pardon sins or praise saintliness. I'm not talking about that. Suggesting that for your own health, you can go beyond the so-called sinner and saint. This is not to do with the saint or the sinner. This is to do with you maintaining your own well-being and peace. You can go beyond the so-called sinner and saint, he says. After all, what makes someone a sinner? So now he's going to give us something to chew on about those old sinners that we don't like.
The judgment of God gets in the way.
What makes someone a sinner? It's not the higher self that sins. If you can visualize a higher self, that old bad sinner, that's not the part of that individual that's doing the sinning. It's the ego or the mind of that person. Same as our egos or minds. There's different words for the ego or mind, manas, buddhi, ahamkara, mind, intelligence, and ego. They're one and the same, but at different levels. They're all mind things, different levels. Well, the levels, It's the mind that sins. And Reverend Russ talked about this in the sermon today. It's the mind where the sins reside. If that same mind develops beautiful character, you call the person a saint. Saint Augustine, Saint Peter, all the saints. If the same mind develops beautiful character, you call the person a saint, but the real self is never affected. Even in the saint, the real self is never affected. The self is always pure. And it's just as pure in the sinner as it is in the saint. You can see that if you choose to. The self is always pure. An example, now he gives an example to prod us along in case we're not quite going along with this. An example is a clear bulb or a colored bulb. If the bulb is colored, it gives a colored light, but you wouldn't say the electricity inside is also colored. You wouldn't say the electricity inside is also colored. the energy that runs through all bulbs is the same. External variations are caused by the colors, the bodies through which the energy passes. In other words, when energy passes through the mind gives us the appearance of a person, but that electricity, the higher self, is the same. The variations on the outside, external, are caused by the bodies through which the energy passes. If it's a colored bulb, it sheds colored light. The same self-functioning through a clean mind shows a saint. If the mind has all lower tendencies, you call the person a sinner. Satchitananda likes this word, clean mind. Can we aim towards cleansing our mind or cleansing our inner vision until we see nothing but the light? Can you clean your mind and your inner vision until you see nothing but the light? Well, you do notice all those other attributes that are not pleasing or aren't pleasing. And you focus on the light. The one who stands supreme is the one who looks beyond the mind-body element. The one among us who stands supreme, if we choose to stand supreme, is the one who looks beyond the mind-body element and sees the genuine or real spirit behind it all, even in the so-called sinner. In the so-called sinner, can we look deeply and see the genuine or real spirit behind it all? Use the light within us so that we only see the light in others. This is something we can do if we choose to. Operative word is can. Are we willing? Are we ready? If we are, we can begin down that path. Why would we want to begin down that path? To experience the peace that we truly are, the peace that we came into the world with, and the peace that will remain after we're gone. To experience that now, we can choose to perceive the world this way, if we want to. The Supreme Person still loves that other one as the pure spirit, though in a way, such a person is spoiling his or her own vehicle. But can you love someone who is spoiling his or her own vehicle without trying to fix them, by the way? We know how to affect others. It's through our example, not through going and bashing people. Such a person is spoiling his or her own vehicle. Ah, that brings up vehicles. He likes vehicles. Some people keep their cars clean. Some people never clean them at all. I don't like it when my car is dirty. I just washed my car the day before yesterday so I could drive a clean car to church. And while I was driving into church, I was so happy, I just said to my car, I love you, you're all clean and you're beautiful, and I love you. And I was happy. My car was happy too.
That's what rain's for.
All right, so some people keep their cars clean, let the rain help do it, and some people never clean them at all. They were given beautiful instruments, but don't take care of them. Feel for them, help them, but do not dislike them. For that person who doesn't clean their inner car, feel for them, help them by making a good example, but do not dislike them because they are the same as you. They are the same as you. They just got dirty cars. That's what Satchitananda says. If your vision always sees the spiritual side of the person, you will be unaffected by all these external things. And that's called yoga drishti. There's a word for it in Sanskrit. Being able to see the light in everyone, see the higher self, or see the spiritual side in everyone. Like Mother Teresa says, she does when she looks at a person and only sees Christ. That's what she testified. Then she is unaffected by the external things, and Satchitananda says, we will be too. And the word for it is yoga drishti, or yogic vision. So there's a word for doing this, practicing it. You just transcend all these superficial things. Look not at the vehicle. Look not at the prakriti. Now, you may have forgotten what prakriti means. In the universe, there are two things. One is prakriti, everything we can see, hear, feel, touch, talk about. That's all prakriti. Prakriti changes. Russ talked about this in the sermon today. He said everything changes. Well, actually, all the prakriti changes. And we see ourselves changing, the universe changes. Prakriti is a function of time. As time goes on, things change. So there's a Sanskrit word for all that stuff, which we often refer to as reality. Scientists refer to that as reality. But we also, and in Sanskrit also, they recognize another aspect to reality. And that's that aspect that is the same before we're born, it lives in us during our lifetime, is the same after we're born. So look not at the prakriti, but look at the purusha, beyond prakriti. So they have a word in Sanskrit for that thing, aspect that never changes. We sometimes call it God. Divine essence, their word for it is purusha, holy or sainted thing. The purusha beyond prakriti, the essence behind the changing forms in nature. And that's what I have for you today. Any questions or comments?
When you said the operable word can, so you know, we're living this life perhaps majority of time in repetition, we take the time to moment to stop and really appreciate the simplicity, patience, and compassion, there's much hope. Thank you.
Last week, one of the women who was here, a new person, said, we have free will. Remember that?
Yeah.
Free will. One of the things we can do with our free will is we can choose to look at life how we choose to. And we can choose, we have the free will to choose to regard our minds as we choose to. We have free will to choose to look at all of the sensory world, which is called prakriti, and if we can't see it, at least to look for this thing called purusha, the thing that doesn't change, stays the same, higher self, to be open to an experience of it. We have the free will to be able to choose to be open for it, look for it, even if we've never experienced it so far. Sometimes I'm not sure I've ever experienced it, even though I talk about it a lot. But I'm open for it. Any other questions or comments?
Thank you for the spiritual essence.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Satchidananda.
Right.
Giving us these wonderful ways. Shall we close with an Om? Let's take three deep and conscious breaths. And with a deep in breath. Shanti, shanti, shanti. And go in peace.
Go early.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.